extraordinaire. What can you learn about keeping your story strong well into your ninth decade? Stay tuned for stories of wisdom and information from the front lines of aging gracefully in the second part of today's show. But first, Bob Sauvé led a compelling tour of a painting during my recent visit to the National Gallery in Ottawa. He knew so much about the story of the 1500s painting called St. Jerome in Penitence that I had to ask about his own story. A school principal, educator, and faculty member at the University of Ottawa, Sauvé always loved galleries and art. When retirement approached, he eagerly dove into his demonstrated interest and became a volunteer docent. Bob Sauvé joins us live by phone from Ottawa to share how to nurture your interest so you stay engaged throughout your life. Welcome to Career Buzz, Bob.
Hi, well, thank you very much.
So, Bob, you volunteer at the National Gallery in Ottawa. What do you like about it?
A lot of buzzwords come to the surface, and you've said a few things there in terms of keeping your story alive and all of that, and keeping young, but you just get energized. Really, you've got a date, you know, you've got to meet people, you got to sort of dress up, but you're not necessarily your Sunday best, but your best foot forward, and that's all very energizing. In fact, I rushed for this phone call. I had just a 9:30 to 10:30 tour of kids, I went in there, you know, energized, and I came out through the roof. It was it's a wonderful experience. So I don't know if I'm answering your question, but you get energy by using it, I guess.
And you've already been to the National Gallery this morning to do one of the tours.
Yeah.
Well, what do you do? Can you tell listeners, I used the word docent there in the intro, what kind of things do you actually do over at the gallery?
Okay, well, docent is a, I think it probably has a German root, probably more of a Latin root too. It means teacher, right? But it's not teaching in the traditional style. It's not just telling people about things. It's having them, it's accompanying people, kids and adults, so that they have an experience. And the experience is often one of insight, one of learning how to look. You know, you look at a painting. I did one with the kids this morning, Bonsecours Market. This is a market area in Montreal. William Raphael was a immigrant from Eastern Europe, and he had come to Montreal about 175 years ago or so. And he settled in Montreal. And you started noticing things when you look at the painting. So I asked the kids, you know, what do you see? And it's faultless. You know, they whatever they see adds to the story. And then once we've seen, you know, a dozen or so things, so we can ask them, well, put it together. What's happening here? You know, and so that's the sort of thing you do. You're accompanying people in the discovery of why this is significant. And often you'll look at thing and you'll say, well, I don't know what the story is, but I just like looking at it. But, you know, your subconscious or your lateral thinking is absorbing it.
Yes, it's a deepening experience in a
it
way.
It is, yeah.
You know, in the National Gallery, like, it was so amazing when I was there in the summer when I met you, but there's thousands of pieces of art,
yeah.
And you can just walk by and you skim the surface, and it occurred to me how deep I went into the one painting that you led the tour on.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how much stuff there was in one painting.
Well, that painting especially, the Jerome in Penitence, mixes eras. You know, you get the 4th century, the 3rd century, and the 16th century mixed in. You also have lessons of the past, you know, that were still significant for Rome on the cusp of Reformation. And so there's all kinds of things occurring, but you know, you say thousands of paintings. That's very true. I've been there 4 years, and I feel like I'm just skimming, really just skimming the surface. But when I do a tour like that, I spend significant hours, you know, on a painting in terms of learning the story, but also learning the techniques they had in those days. So that as a side effect, is very enriching. Knowledge is empowering too, you know. So it's
absolutely
just for the volunteer, it's very, very gratifying.
And maybe later in this interview, we'll talk a little bit about that one painting. And if listeners are on their computers, they can actually go to the National Gallery website. Okay. Just find the National Gallery website, and you can actually find an image of this particular painting. It's called Jerome in Penitence.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll talk about it later. Who's the artist?
The Mantegna. There's a couple there. You're catching me short.
I think it was Mantegna. Who it was. So we'll come back to that painting in a minute. But let's talk a little bit more about your volunteer experience. And what does it draw from you? What kind of strengths, personal strengths or qualities that you feel are being drawn out of you when you're actually doing this work at the gallery?
Oof, geez. Well, it's a good question. It's not just the mind working its way. There's a lot of things. Organization, you know, make sure my wife is partially retired, so there's all kinds of making sure that we don't miss out on being with each other and that sort of thing. And there's it's very physical for me. And you know, you go to the library and you move around, but I do my best thinking while I walk my dog. So I'll study for half an hour or 40 minutes or something like that, and I'll go for a walk. So all these elements fall into it. So when I get to the point of presenting, I have all this stuff occurring in the back of my mind. But you know, liking to read and that sort of thing comes with it, but I think it has to be sort of a predisposition people have.
Yes.
You know, it might not be the type of thing that people might feel drawn to, but you don't have to read that much, but liking to read and liking to absorb and digest stuff. So that's my career in education that paying dividends now.
Well, let's go back to that and talk a little bit about what you did in your career and then how these volunteer activities fit in. You worked in education. You were an educator for many years. What led you originally in your career into the field of education?
I hate to admit it there, but I needed a job. I needed money.
Yes. Well, like lots of people.
I think I lucked in. I mean, I studied at the University of Toronto. I was doing my master's in philosophy, and I somewhere along the line said, well, what are you going to do now, you know? And I took a course in education, and I lucked in. After the first month, I met a master teacher. In fact, this guy, I'll mention his name, John Fasciano. Okay, I don't know if he's still in Montreal or not, but had a big influence on me just by his own quiet enthusiasm. Like I was friendly with him that first year I was teaching, and I lucked in. I think I went in to make money, and I ended up with a career.
And so what happened? Were you a classroom teacher before you moved into administration?
That's right. I was a classroom teacher for about 15 years, and then I moved into being a vice principal and principal.
And you also worked at the University of Ottawa. How did that come about?
I retired. I did 30 years, just round numbers, from about 1970 to 2000 with a school board. But I had also been teaching part-time through Ottawa U, the philosophy department, and there was an opportunity for me to retire early and sort of roll over into a part-time position at the Faculty of Education. So I did that for about 8 years.
And when did this interest in art and galleries emerge for you?
It's always been there. You know, you do stuff, but it's not stuff you talk about. It's always, you know, you'll look at something, you look at that in the paper, you know, and you'll see the ad, but you say, gee, you know, it's really well put together. You know, you're looking at the dimensions, you're looking at the color harmony and all of this, and sometimes with people who are like-minded, you'll show the appreciation for how well put together something is. So it comes through the side door a little bit, you know. And I studied philosophy, so I did, you know, the required course in aesthetics and that sort of thing. So you end up appreciating, but you also end up wanting to articulate.
Yes.
You know, and you want to talk about how Madison Avenue has used art and psychology to undermine your pocketbook or something like this, you know, to sell and all of this. And So there's a bit of that. Another big factor, my son, who's a clever lad, was studying at King's College in Dalhousie University in Halifax, and he took a course in his undergrad, I believe, he took a course, a history of art through art, and it was offered by a professor at NASCAD. And so one Christmas he had done the course, and he comes back talking about this and that, and I was so bloody envious of this guy.
Yes.
You know, like, God, he knows these things. And so I was pretty close to retirement when he was doing that. And then John Berger had written a book about art, I forget, Ways of Seeing, and I'd read that as a result of that conversation with my son.
It's interesting, you know. So often we hear stories of the child being influenced by the parent in their career choices, and here's a story of the parent being influenced by the child in their volunteer and career choices.
Absolutely, and I think if you talk to adults, if they're honest, I think they'll have to admit more often than not that the kids got some good ideas.
Yes, and were you volunteering while you were still an educator? Were you involved?
Yeah, I started volunteering while I was still teaching at Ottawa U. Yeah.
Yeah, and what kind was that, with the National Gallery, or were you
doing
other things?
With the National Gallery, they had asked for, they had trolled the community for volunteers. I signed up, and the first year they gave the volunteers, my cohort, an education. Actually, we learned about the collection. We learned about how to present it and teach it, and which was using the same teaching technique that most school boards use nowadays. The word they use is constructivism, but that's more or less, it's a broad reach of skills and things you do.
Yes.
But that was the approach. It's really to go plumb the lived experience of your viewer, and then what you're doing right now as an interviewer is constructivist activity.
Yeah, it emerges, right?
It emerges sort of along the way, and
yes.
you respect the segues, you know, and conversations are never straight arrows, you know, they meander. So there's a bit of that happening in conversations about works of art. So after the full year, of course, we were harnessed to the wagon and started giving tours to kids. And then some of us wanted to do tours to adults. And at that time, the National Gallery was giving one-hour-long tours free of charge to patrons in the afternoon. And I volunteered for a few of those. And I guess that's along the time when it really clocked in, you know. If I can get 10, 15 years out of this, I would really be pleased, you know. So.
That's great. Yeah. We're talking to Bob Sauvay here. He's a volunteer docent with the National Gallery in Ottawa. He's joining us live by phone from Ottawa on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on CIUT 89.5 FM in the Greater Toronto Area and CIUT.FM worldwide. Bob, let's talk about how volunteering does keep you engaged and vibrant. Now, you know, you started volunteering while you were still working, and let's think about all the listeners now who may be in the midst of their careers, they're doing some work, and maybe they do a little bit of volunteering, or maybe they're even starting to volunteer more. Now, from your perspective, now having retired kind of formally from the world of work, but still being very active in volunteering, what were your thoughts and feelings as you approached retirement, thinking about what am I going to do next?
Well, exactly. That's the question. What am I going to do next? And I, in fact, the household joke is that I'm a perfect candidate for retirement because I had to choose between woodworking and my, you know, sports activities that I like to do and plans for travel and all of this. But somewhere along the line, that first year at the National Gallery taught me a lot. It taught me that the team is important. You know, like you go there, but then you're with like-minded individuals, and so that you get carried by that sort of enthusiasm and energy.
Yes.
And I hope I bring my share to it too. You know, so there's that, and it's a, you know, it's a different horizon. So that's enlivening too. You know, they say a change is as good as a rest, but you know that's what I experience. You know, when you're there, you're doing something different, and it's gratuitous too. I don't think if you'd pay me, I'd come to it with the same same willingness.
Yes, the volunteer quality of it makes it more somehow appealing.
You do as much as you want. In fact, I'm on my way out this morning, trying to get over here on time. Somebody was accompanying me to my car, and they said, you know, it's, they were giving a tour also, and they stayed a half hour longer. You know, people don't like that, to hear that, because, you know, it's spending too much time, as it were, but you've got the time,
yeah.
The kids are interested, and the teacher doesn't have to bring the class back because the bus won't be there for another half hour. Why not? You know,
it was a school trip, was it, this morning?
Yeah, local school.
Great. So it's such an amazing connection, especially with the demographics in this country. And we have a lot of people who have amazing experiences in life wanting to share it. And then there's youth who come on school trips, for instance. And it's just such a beautiful pairing of resources that it's amazing it doesn't happen more. But do you remember before this kind of whole flowering for you of this volunteer activity? Do you remember what were your worries or thoughts as you approached retirement? You know, many people are wondering, well, what am I going to do next? How were you feeling confident that you'd find something? Were you feeling worried or anxious? What was your frame of mind?
Personality type, I guess, a bit type A. I don't think those things crossed my mind in terms of. Oh dear, what am I going to do? You know, I was going to fill my time. There's always something to do, but the volunteer, you know, whether you work in your house or you paint a room or that sort of thing, you keep busy. But keeping busy by itself is not a dead end, but it's a bit solipsistic, it's a bit self-involved.
Yes.
The volunteering, the going out there, like I used to coach swimming, just the encountering the other, you know, the other people, different stories, different expectations. I'm trying to put myself into those shoes of worrying and no.
So that wasn't your case, because I guess others, have you heard that from peers or other people who were in your kind of cohort?
Well, one of my wife's colleagues was a lawyer. We said, I'm going to work till I'm 90 because I got no interest. Well, maybe that's his interest, you know. Maybe he should get involved with something like KESO or something like that. You know, like,
yes. That's the Canadian Executive Service overseas, like
correct,
the volunteer thing where you get a chance to help other companies.
Other companies, you travel abroad, help developing economies. Lawyers are in high demand because they can help burgeoning justice systems, you know, be transparent and, you know, the world. We're lucky in Canada. God, we're lucky.
Yes.
we've won the lottery in terms of the geography, but also in terms of just the right time at the right place. And you know, we have our own sins, but we're very lucky. But not all countries are lucky, and so getting involved. One thing early on, and sort of zoning in on a bit more precision on your question there, I had taken a course in woodworking. Well, actually, wood carving, and you know, you make a little bowl and you do little sort of projects and all of that. You learn how to use the tools, so you cut yourself. Incredibly sharp, these chisels. They're just incredibly sharp. And I was thinking, well, somewhere down the road, you know, I sort of had a vision of myself making little things.
Yes.
You know, and sort of putting them around. But that didn't last too long. I mean, I'm doing it a little bit. I mean, I broke my shoulder this summer, so I'm doing it for a little while, but when I get full mobility again, I'll do little things. But I'm thinking, well, I wouldn't mind developing this into a skill I can teach kids. You know.
Yes.
You know, like do penknife carvings and that sort of thing. You used to learn that in Boy Scouts. You know, to do little penny whistles out of wood, or to do scarf ties. You know, made of wood, and put a little design on them.
So it's
relatively easy to do. All you have to do is. A first go at it, and then you're off to the races, eh?
Right, but it's still this putting yourself out there, getting out, encountering the other, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think so. I think the other people. I mean, you're a prime example. You're certainly other oriented. When you were in the gallery, you were listening to me. I didn't know who you were, but your expression was alive. Your eyes were alive. And then you approached the conversation, and once you do it a couple of times, you know, it's the next time you say how you doing to somebody, you know, a total stranger.
Yes.
It's much easier. But then there's a gold mine.
Yes.
I'm exaggerating, but.
And how would you say the whole volunteering experience now has affected your outlook on life?
Oh, very much. I think I'd be deprived if I didn't do it. Now, I've got to say, I didn't say this now. I've got to say this too, okay? I think my mother found out I didn't say it. She'd probably take my head off. But my mom was 93, her 94th year. He lives in Montreal, and is paired up with somebody she's very mobile, but she's almost blind, so she's paired up with somebody who's not mobile but has good eyesight. So in a sense, they volunteer for each other, and these people are independent, but she's been volunteering for the last 25, 30 years of her life. Not like Doris Smith, they're 40 years.
Yes.
40 years is quite an accomplishment, but... But there's a bit of that too, and I see what joy she has when I call it. I'm going to go and visit Tuesday. I say, no, don't come Tuesday. I'll be out that morning.
She's busy volunteering.
Yeah, yeah. So that's good.
Yeah, and I guess it's really about nurturing those interests. And like you're saying, the art interest for you, and we're going to talk to Doris Smith, who's been volunteering for over 40 years with all kinds of organizations, and how important it is to really nurture those interests.
Well, nurture the interest, but, you know, I don't want to take away from your message there, don't reinvent, redeploy. By the way, I've used that line a couple of times.
Yes.
In fact, it's a really good line. It's not about nurturing interest as much as just nurturing yourself.
Yes.
You know, like, in a sense, and in a non-solipsistic way, in a non-selfish, these words, I'm having a hard time articulate, but it's nurturing yourself, and the best way to nurture yourself, the best ground for enrichment is the other person and their interest. You know,
the kids
I saw today... when we did the Voice of Fire. Can you imagine? There were those three stripes. Remember?
Yes.
The big kids get it. Kids get it. I did that painting, and the message there is we've looked at paintings up to there. We've looked at paintings, and the story is in the painting, and we've got to look for clues and cues and that sort of thing and objects, and we have to be detectives and piece it together. Okay, so that's kind of neat. But get to the Voice of Fire, and there's a bit of a visual trick to the Voice of Fire. There's a bit of a after image effect. But the kids get it in terms of saying when they get the after image effect. What's this telling you? You know, and these are like 7-8-year-olds, okay? What's this telling you about where the painting is occurring? It's in my head.
Wow! So the kids get it in this.
The kids get it, but the adults will look at it and say, "We paid what for that?" And you know, they don't give themselves the time to appreciate. A career. This is one of the career notable career achievements of Barnett Newman. But a career brought to his attention. You know, and here is a man who was, and it's a very deeply religious painting. And here's this Jewish man who was not Jewish. I mean, he's not practicing Jew. He got the kids, and he got his bar mitzvah and that sort of thing. But he was an anarchist, really, and he wrote an introduction to Prince Kropotkin, and he forswore religion. I don't think the rabbis liked him any much. Anyhow, but he does this Voice of Fire, and it's a direct quote from the Bible, and it's about the still small voice. It's not the fire, but it's the conscience within you, and it's powerful, and the kids get it. And the teacher was there this morning saying, "Wow, boy, have I got my journaling journaling kit." For the next month on this sort of thing, you know, so secular school, but yet it'll be that sort of true art, appreciating one man's insight, right, Barnett Newman.
Yes.
A whole culture's insight, you know, Judeo-Christianity, if you want, in a secular context, thinking and talking about what is that still small voice? Do we think alike? Do we resonate the same way when we see poor person.
Nice. We're going to...
Am I talking too much?
No, I was actually going to talk to you more about the other painting that
okay.
we have mentioned.
Oh, that's right.
But we just have a minute or two left. So okay. I'm just going to direct listeners to the National Gallery website, and they can have a look at St. Jerome and Penitence or this other one. And the name of the other one that you were just talking about, in case listeners are curious about looking it up?
The last one right now?
The last one you mentioned.
Okay, but it's Barnett Newman's The Voice of Fire.
Voice of Fire.
Yeah, and it's a very new, it's just three stripes on a huge canvas, you know, 18 feet tall and all of this, and 8 foot wide. But it's a, it's the experience that goes with it.
Right, so check it out. Check it out on the National Gallery site.
Yeah.
Bob Sauvé, one final question,
sure.
just to wrap up now, given some of the stories that you've told us about your career and then the volunteering, what can you share with listeners about what you've personally learned about making good choices in life, good choices in career and volunteering? What can you tell listeners about your experience of what you've learned?
Wow. Well, a good experience that served me well, and I've repeated it a few times, when you see a success story around you, a real-life success story, not a promotion on television or that sort of thing, but a person, and I'm John Fasciano, my first year, and here I am, rookie teacher, and there's this man, he's not a tall man, most of his students were taller than he is, okay, high school context, and he was well-loved. He was very effective. So, in a sense, I paid attention to him. Pay attention to success stories around you. They're there.
That's sure. great advice. Bob Sauvé, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, next time you're in town, you've got my number, give me a buzz, and I'll show you another painting, and we can... Over a beer, we can talk about it.
All right. And listeners can go to the National Gallery next time they're in Ottawa and take a tour with one of the docents,
yes.
whether it's Bob or another one, and learn more about going deep
yes.
into paintings.
There are two tours every day, 11:15, 12:15. And on Saturdays, the same thing. And on Thursday evening, when it's free, there's a 5:15 and 6:15 tour. And it's always a different painting. And yes, do come and do it.
Right on. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Okay. We were talking to Bob Sauvé. He's a volunteer docent at the National Gallery in Ottawa. On Career Buzz here, I'm Mark Franklin, your host on CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a little music break and then station IDs. The song I want to play is For Mitch, written by Herky Cutler, who's a career development professional out in Alberta. And he actually has a radio show on Lethbridge Community Radio. His show is called Career Tracks. And we're actually going to try and see if we can get one or two of his shows played here on Career Buzz. The story behind this song is that his nephew suffered some brain damage during a fight in a club on a New Year's Eve, and his whole life changed. He got depressed and suicidal. Herky wrote this song in East Cooley, Alberta, which I've been to, sitting along the Red Deer River, and he was thinking about Mitch. At the time, Mitch was in a psychiatric ward in a big city hospital, but today Mitch has learned how to manage his brain damage and works as a professional fundraiser. Here's Herky Cutler.
Turned to a loved one whose strength was fading fast. future opportunities and beauty that you probably forgot. So take a stand and rise above and make a courageous choice. There are many people on this earth who need to hear your voice. You gotta go where life takes you. You gotta navigate the falls. You gotta play the cards they dealt you.
From the roots up. CIUT 89.5 FM, broadcasting live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. From Hart House, University of Toronto.
We're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. That was Herky Cutler, his song that we just heard about his cousin Mitch. Amazing song. Thanks, Herky, for that. Before moving on to our next interview, I want to let listeners know about a free teleworkshop, how to turn your strengths into a career you'll love. Next teleworkshop is tomorrow, Thursday, November 3rd at 12:15 to 1 p.m. Check careercycles.com to register. And as you're listening to the show, and if you have questions or comments about volunteering, the theme today on today's show is volunteering and how volunteering keeps your story strong, vibrant, and engaged. Give us a call and we'll have you on the show, or you can email me. The phone number, 946-7000, and that's area code 416, or email me with a comment or question at mark, with a K, at careercycles.com. Doris Smith has been an active volunteer for over 40 of her 86 years in parallel with her career in fundraising. From the volunteer circle of the National Gallery to the Canadian Federation of Friends of Museums, Doris has been a board member, editor, organizer, and fundraiser extraordinaire. What can you learn about keeping your story strong and vibrant well into your ninth decade? We talked to Doris Smith for stories and wisdom from the front lines of aging gracefully. Welcome to Career Buzz, Doris.
And glad that you're having me on. I'm very happy to talk to you.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us this morning. I know you've done so much volunteer work over the years. What do you like about the volunteer work that you're doing?
It engages me. It always teaches me new things. It's always a challenge. And you meet the most interesting and marvelous people that way. It keeps me alive. It keeps me young.
And what are the things that are on your volunteer resume right now? What are you doing these days?
Well, these days I'm sort of cutting back a little bit. I am editor of a newsletter for, you mentioned, the Canadian Federation of Friends of Museums. It's a small group. We sort of try to serve the interests of volunteers and donors, board members, people who are involved with museums across Canada. Most museums, as you probably know, are run by volunteers, the small ones. I mean, there are a couple of thousand of them at least. So volunteers are very important in the museum world. I'm also interested in working with other organizations. Because we are a small group at the Friends of Museums, we have very little money, so we get together with other friends groups in town here in Ottawa, because together we can do much more than we could do just one by one. So we put on a panel discussion on the cultural transformations, bilingual discussion last month, which drew over almost 200 people to this panel discussion, and was a great success, we think.
Another volunteer activity that you were telling me about before we got on the air was something to do with the chapel inside the National Gallery. And not only was that something that you worked on, but you did some pretty astonishing fundraising for that as well. What happened there?
Well, this is a long story if you want to hear it, but I think it's the most important thing I ever did. In the 70s, I became a docent, just like Bob Sowe has been a docent at the gallery. And by the 80s, I was president of the Friends of the Gallery. And the gallery was going to be closed. As you know, they were going to open a new building, a beautiful new building, but for 1 year, there would be no gallery. So I went to the director at the time, Joseph Martin, and said, what can we do? Because we'll lose all of our members. We had about 2,000 members at the time, if we have nothing to do. And he said, raise me $500,000 for the Rideau Chapel. He wanted the Rideau Chapel, which was in 1,000 pieces in storage. He wanted it installed in the new gallery. And it had not actually been envisaged. There wasn't even space for it in the design. So I said, yes, we'll do. And actually, we did raise $625,000, which was a lot of money in the 80s, as well as involved literally thousands of donors, hundreds of volunteers. It was great fun, especially seeing how the nuns who came to visit the place were amazed to see something that had disappeared all of a sudden being reborn. There was the same space again. It was quite an experience.
It's an amazing story to have reconstructed this chapel from, as you say, 1,000 pieces and put it back together again inside the National Gallery. What did you draw on, Doris? What sort of personal strengths and skills and experiences did you draw on to lead the charge and to raise the money and to make this happen?
Well, I was just the coordinator. I drew on the enthusiasm of the volunteers who became involved, the volunteers at the gallery as well as the volunteers among the women who had been students, because there used to be a school at the Rideau Chapel, was a part of the nuns, the convent school. And they became involved, wanting to see it rehabilitated and reborn. And, of course, the people who in the first place had insisted on not having it completely destroyed and lost, but on having it at least saved in a warehouse. So it was working together with all these people. I mean, I didn't do it alone.
No, of course not. But it needs somebody to coordinate and to initiate and to spearhead.
Yeah, I like to do that. And it taught me another thing. It taught me that I needed to know much more about fundraising because I knew nothing about it. And so I took it seriously, and I went to Algonquin College and got my diploma in fundraising. And it became a profession, a real profession. From then on, for several years, I worked as a professional fundraiser.
What age were you when you actually did that, when you went to Algonquin College?
Well, I must have been about 60 or so. And over 60, and it's not difficult. I mean, you compete against the younger ones, but they are all in it together, and age doesn't make any difference. I mean, once you have a common interest,
yes,
and you are all engaged in the same task, you just carry on. It doesn't matter how old or young you are.
What did you do after you finished the Algonquin College program?
Well, my professor hired me, and I became a consultant, and I worked on various cases, but the two main ones were as campaign manager for two capital campaigns, one for the Boys and Girls Club in Ottawa, and the other one for the creation of Villa Marconi, which was the Italian community got together to build a long-term care center, a community center for the Italian community, which was fascinating because they had never done anything together. They had always been, as you know, you have the Italians go by sort of village or town or Abruzzi or some other province.
Yes.
But for the first time, they had to come together and work together on one cause. And this was part of the joy of doing this, because to see how all these people who normally really did not work in common came together. And with the Boys and Girls Club, of course, it was a capital campaign for their summer camp. You realize how important the work is that they do, how it affects lives of these boys and girls who who benefit from the programs that, that the club puts on. I mean, it changes their lives. It keeps them off the streets. It makes
What kind of money was involved in those two projects?
Actually, both projects. Each one of them was for $2.5 million, and we did raise $2.5 million for each one of them.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, it's hard work. Let me tell you, it is hard work. But it has its rewards because you work together with the volunteers. You follow the same, you know, the same hopes, the same rewards. At the end of the Villa Marconi campaign, I was especially touched when I got hugs all around and I was told I was now part of the family.
That's really nice. So there's great gratification.
Very much so.
You know, and it's an interesting career choice. Many people do not have that even on their radar screen, and yet there is a really recognized profession of fundraising, and you were part of that community.
Yes, and it's not, if you want to be a real fundraiser and get your certification, the CFRE, you have exams to pass. You have to... every few years, you have to be re-accredited. And as part of that process, you have to keep up with the latest information. You have to have, you follow the ethical rules. And also, you have to do, as part of your sort of character, you have to raise funds yourself for a charitable cause without pay, as a volunteer, as part of the requirements for being a fundraiser.
And if listeners are interested in this career of fundraising or development, as it's sometimes called, what would you say are the top two or three personal characteristics or strengths that, that people should have if they're interested?
You have to be able to commit yourself to a cause for a time, whether you are paid or not paid. You have to like people. And you have to work for a cause that you believe in. But the main thing is, I think, a thorough. There are some very good professional development courses now available. I mean, I know the one in Ottawa, but obviously you have them in Toronto. There are the associations. It's a very good career. I would recommend it to anybody.
Great. That's great. Thanks for sharing that with us. We're talking to Doris Smith here. She's been an active volunteer for over 40 of her 86 years, and she's been actively involved with the Friends of Museums. Here on Career Buzz, I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and CIUT.FM worldwide. Doris, take me back for a moment now. You came to Canada after World War II. You were a displaced person. What's your story of coming to Canada?
Well, I came to Canada because it was one country that I could go to, and I thought it had both French and English, and my French was better in those days than my English, so I ended up in Montreal. And actually, as a displaced person, I had survived with my mother and sister only due to the help of charity, because we were stuck in the eastern parts of Poland after the war, and a Catholic charity, Caritas, sent in a freight train to bring people out into the western part, into the British zone. And we were so starved at that point that people cried when they saw us. And then we sort of fed up on care packages. So, and then the United Nations, of course, provided the camps. So I came to Canada, I came to Montreal. We were all required at that time, people coming to work for a year, either in a hospital as a domestic or for the men in a lumber camp or mine. So I ended up as a domestic in Montreal, and I very much wanted to go to McGill. And again, the charity of people, a family who took me in and gave me shelter and a home, allowed me to go to McGill, where I got in on scholarships. So I mean, whatever I am, it's due to charitable individuals as well as charitable organizations. So
amazing.
I feel that I have to, you know, pay back in a way. I mean, I've enjoyed paying back.
Yes. So you went to McGill, and it must have been in your early 20s or mid-20s when you came to Canada after the war.
Yes.
And what did you study there, and what did you do earlier on in your career after that?
Right. Well, I studied, since I was more comfortable with, I studied French and German languages and graduated, and then I got a job at the Bank of Montreal in the research department on the strength of an essay I had written. They were interested in the writing ability, I guess. After that, I got married, and we moved to the States. We moved to Vancouver. We came back, eventually to Ottawa. And I had applied to the Bank of Canada for a job, but they would not, in those days, hire married women. So I got another job in an office, and I had to resign when I was pregnant with our first child. So, I mean, and from then on, I took up volunteering because in those days it was simply not possible, or it wasn't really usual for a married woman with family to work.
Yes, I mean, it's amazing to hear that, you know, in the context of today's realities. You know, now looking back at that from today's perspective, where you couldn't get hired by the Bank of Canada because you were married, and then you had to resign because you had a child, instead of now we have maternity leaves and it's a normal part of the world of work. What's your perspective on how things have changed for women in the workplace?
Enormously. I mean, it is such an improvement. I mean, the situation is totally different.
Yes. It totally different. And did it feel unfair to you back then that these things were happening, or was it just so part of the culture at the time that it was normal?
Well, it did seem a bit unfair because, I mean, I could see that some very bright women were working in some, you know, minor positions, and they would never be promoted from there.
Yes.
It really was not fair.
Amazing. So you've seen some incredible changes. Now you then went into volunteering because that was what was available to you. What was your first volunteer activity?
Well, my first volunteer activity, really the most consistent one, was at the National Gallery. They were just setting up the docent program then in the 70s, and I joined that because I was interested in art. And it was a very educational program. I was a docent for 18 years. And at the beginning, they had some very rigorous requests, I mean, or requirements for learning. They were practically trying to make us into art historians. you know, you learn a lot if every week or every Monday you meet for a couple of hours through most of the year to learn about the collections as well as art in general, and it was a very lovely experience.
Yes.
You felt that you knew the works in the gallery so well, you lived with them, they almost became almost like your own. And teaching, you know, dealing with children coming in or adults was very rewarding.
We've heard that from Bob Sauvé, who we spoke to before, who also is a docent now and yeah. does that. And he sounded equally engaged in the whole experience of it.
It's a great experience, as well as there are the other volunteers. I don't know if Bob mentions them, the ones who go into the schools.
Yes.
That's a big program, and I think it's a very useful one also, because it seems to me that the schools are retreating from teaching art these days. There seems to be less money available for that. So if volunteers can fill in, they are doing a really important job.
Absolutely. We're talking to Doris Smith here on Career Buzz. She's been an active volunteer for over 40 of her 86 years in parallel with her career in fundraising. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on CIUT 89.5 FM. If you do have comments or questions about your experience with volunteering or about the stories of Bob or Doris, either give us a call at 946-7000, 416-946-7000, or drop me an email with your comment or question. It's mark@careercycles.com, and I'll read that question or comment on the air. So, Doris, back to your story was that once you had kids, it was very difficult for a woman to actually work and get paid work, so you were volunteering. Up until the moment that you went back to school for the Algonquin College fundraising certificate, was there any other paid work that you did in your career that paralleled your volunteer?
Not after I got married, no. I mean, I was doing volunteer work of all kinds, but I did not get paid. My husband had a reasonable salary as a civil servant, so we were not very interested in making huge amounts of money. So we were happily living on his salary.
And then, yeah, you wanted to go back to Algonquin College, and then you started earning money again in your 60s after, in a period of time when most people are thinking of retirement.
That's right. I did go back, but I guess I had missed it. And it is possible to go back in your 60s. I mean, if you are healthier, there's no reason why you have to sit around at home or, you know, just play golf. I found it that it helped me being of that age. For instance, for the Boys and Girls Club, I set up their planned giving program. And meeting with people who would perhaps like to leave a legacy to the Boys and Girls Club, I think it's almost helps if you're of a certain age to go out and meet these people who are mostly retired. You're of their own age, they're of their own generation. It helps in the fundraising.
Yes. How would you say the volunteering experiences you've had have influenced your outlook on life?
Well, I think it's probably true to say that they have shaped my life, and they have made me realize how important volunteering is. I know I was told by somebody, I was working with CASO at one time, which is the executive service organization. I was sent to Estonia to help them set up some kind of fundraising, charitable organization after it became independent after the Soviets moved out. And I was told at the time that charity volunteering was actually illegal under the Soviet regime, because the state was supposed to provide everything. So a doctor told me how they had secretly handed out layettes to newborn infants, making sure that the authorities didn't know, because they could have ended up in prison for this. So, I mean, charity and volunteering shows the, let's say, the state of health of the civil society.
And amazing to hear that the Soviets made it illegal. I guess the thinking is that the state needs to employ people, so there shouldn't be anybody doing in their spare time volunteering.
Yeah, they might do something against the state, possibly, and supposedly the state provides everything, but the state never provides everything, as we all know. So volunteering is absolutely useful, essential. I mean, I think Canada is one of the countries in which we have more volunteers proportionately than in many others, and they really make the world go round.
Interesting. How would you say volunteerism has changed over the years since you've been active?
It has become, I mean, with the changes in society, in expectations, in the work habits, there are fewer people available for long-term volunteering. You have to catch them for shorter projects.
Yes.
But it's still very important to involve them. The volunteering, let's say, has changed in some ways. It's just different. It's not better or worse. But it continues. And let's hope it does continue, because it brings people together. It shows them what's important.
And what's next for you in your volunteering career?
Well, next for me, end of the month, I'm off to Parliament Hill with members of the Canadian Museums Association to talk to, meet with senators and MPs to tell them all about why museums are important.
Right. Now, so you're going to be advocating for museums with parliamentarians.
Yes, I'm going to be advocating for museums. I think museums are an important component of our culture.
Well, you sure sound passionate about it. Doris, last question, just to reflect now on your life and the twists and turns that you've experienced and all the choices that you've made. What can you share with listeners about making good career and life choices based on your own experience?
My own experience is that nothing that you have ever learned is lost. At some point or other, you will be able to use it. The other thing is, don't be intimidated if things don't go right. I mean, things can go very wrong, but keep at it, work at it, don't be afraid, move, and take chances, take risks, and that's about it. And care. I mean, it's life is it's not just you. It's all the people. It's the networks. It's your friends. It's your family, that you call, and your colleagues. So let's improve Canada.
Right on. Thank you, Doris Smith, so much for joining us here on Career Buzz and sharing your story.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Bye.
You've been listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. You can find out more about me at careercycles.com. Two other hosts of Career Buzz are Louisa Jewell at positivematters.com and Leanne Sachs at livinginthemoment.ca. If you have any comments on today's show, please email me at mark@careercycles.com. Thanks to my guests today, which were Bob Sauvé and Doris Smith. Technical production today was by Ethan Cheel. An MP3 of today's show will be available from the Career Buzz link on careercycles.com. Catch Career Buzz every Wednesday here at 11 a.m. till noon on CIUT. That's it for today's live version of Career Buzz. Thanks for listening.